last three programs, I have presented a case for the biblical account of creation. Today, I'd like to drive a final stake into the theory of evolution with some of the most compelling evidence against its authority. At the end, you decide what's true, what should you believe, and why.
Welcome to this Friday edition of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. I'm Dave Druey, and today Chip will conclude his message, Why I Believe in Creation. And this message is a part of a series Chip calls Why I Believe, a six-message series examining some of the most pivotal issues concerning the Christian faith, and one that promises that you don't have to throw your brains in the trash can to become a Christian. At the end of our program today, I'll give you information on how you can get a copy of this groundbreaking series for your own library. Well, now let's join Chip for today's message.
In the 1960s, some of you and some of us said, if it feels good, do it. When we said, how do you feel about it? Existentialism. When you started making decisions with your feelings instead of your intellect. When we moved away from, as you'll see, moral absolutes. Once you have the sovereignty of self, man is the measure, God is dethroned, then notice the implications. You go from moral absolutes to moral relativism. There can't be a right and wrong. It's time plus chance. We all came from a single cell somewhere, sometime. All those feelings you have, that sense of justice, when people cut you off, when people steal from you, when people violate you, you know, why are you so mad? They're just fellow animals on the journey. Who's to say what's right and wrong? No one has the right to say that about anything. There is no absolute right, absolute wrong. That's what we're taught. Situational ethics came in and pragmatism came in, and Dewey said, we don't want to teach kids facts and absolutes. We want to teach them to be evolving creatures, pragmatic, who can experience life. Where's that taken us? Well, sexual revolution. God was dead, thanks to Nietzsche, Huxley, Hume, and the intellectual thinkers of our day. Finally, we're free from all that Victorian, puritanical, sexual mores of a misinformed, misguided religious group of people. We can have sex anytime with anyone, with any gender. It's interesting, before that revolution, we didn't have herpes like today. We didn't have sexually transmitted diseases like today. AIDS was never heard of. Do you know, in the Sahara region of Africa, I'm talking Darwinism has been bought into, and then it was applied to morals and values and sociology. In some countries in the Sahara region of Africa, over 50% of the population is infected with HIV. When I was in Africa about 3 years ago, you know one of the biggest problems too? You know what they think AIDS is? American invention. What do they call it? American invention to deter sex. They thought we made it up so they wouldn't have sex. You can't convince people in many parts of Africa that it's a real problem. And you know what happens to those people? They all die. Let's thank Darwin. Let's thank a system of thinking that said there can't be a right and wrong. Let's thank a system that said there is no God, and all those prudish commandments like you're made in His image, that every person has dignity, that every person has value, that there are certain things that are right and certain things that are wrong. But the fact of the matter is we've bought into the other. And now we've sown and sown and sown, and now we're reaping. In fact, you know, let me push it one more. Racism, Nazism, and sexism are all a part of the natural conclusion of Darwinism. If we are animals, if we have all evolved, if natural selection is true, the survival of the fittest, the best of the species, and we're just another species, then we don't have room for the weak. We don't have room for anything less than the best of our race. Guess who loved this kind of thinking? Guess who one of Darwin's great disciples was? Adolf Hitler. In fact, listen to Darwin's own words, written in 1881. The more civilized so-called Caucasian or white races have beaten the Turkish hollow in the struggle for existence. Looking to the world at no very distant date, what an endless number of lower races will have been eliminated by the higher civilized races throughout the world. Darwin wasn't really politically correct, was he? Huxley, who was the great promoter of Darwin, who is the atheist, wrote in stronger words. No rational man, cognizant of the facts, believe that the average Negro is the equal, still less the superior, of the white man. It is simply incredible to think that. He will be able or literally, he will not be able to compete successfully with his bigger-brained and smaller-jawed rival in a contest which is to be carried out by thoughts and not by bites. How's that for a view of the races? That's where Darwinism, it's not where it took us, it's where it started. Moving on, ladies, hold your breath. Charles Darwin. The chief distinction between the sexes, the intellectual powers of the two sexes, is shown by man's attaining to a higher eminence in whatever he takes up than women. Preach it, Charles. Whether requiring deep thought, reason, or imagination, or merely the use of the senses and hands, we may also infer that the average of mental power in a man must be above that of a woman. See, people, what I'm telling you, isn't it interesting when you begin to play out Darwin's philosophy? It has been played out for the last 150 years. I'll tell you who the liberator of woman was. Jesus. Before Jesus came on the scene, women were property. Jesus came and the Apostle Paul would expand on his teaching and say in Galatians 3, there's neither Greek nor Jew, slave nor free, male or female. The early church filled with women. Women treated with equality and love. Jesus ministered to women. He violated all the social mores. He would touch a woman. He loved a woman. He cared for a woman. He said they have value. They are co-heirs of the grace of God. Peter would teach radical, wacky things in that cultural. Treat your wife and live with her in an understanding way? We're talking about a Greek and Roman world where men traded in their wives like underwear. And when they wore out, they got a new one. And a wife could be divorced for any reason at any time. Darwin didn't liberate you, babe. Jesus did. But now we've been hoodwinked for 100+ years to think that if you believe in Jesus and the Bible, you're anti-intellectual. And if you believe in science and the God of science and humanism, which really is a really sneaky way to figure out how to get rid of a God that we all know deep in our hearts we're accountable to. I just haven't met a lot of Darwinists when someone they love dies at a gravesite. I am always astounded that the high science, high view of humans and all this, and then they lose a child or they lose a loved one. And then they punt to this religious talk. Well, they're in a better place. Where? It's a material universe. They were a blob, they came a blob, they left a blob. Let's be consistent. They were a single cell, they rose, they came, they're going back in the ground. No human being thinks that in times of crisis. What I'm asking you to do is be intellectually honest. Question number 7. I better move on. Which theory or claim reflects most accurately the laws of empirical science? And all I want to say here is that the historical presupposition behind the scientific method, behind the rise of great science, comes when you believe that the universe is orderly, that it is predictable, that there is harmony, not that it's time plus chance plus something. In fact, I was watching the other night, it's sort of the anniversary of all the Apollo missions, and they showed one of the astronauts in the space shuttle, and they showed, all this math. And the astronauts said, on boards for years they worked mathematical formulas. And they told me when we came around the moon, the exact second we would see the Earth, the exact second the lights would come up, and everything had to be so precise, we left nothing to chance for us to rendezvous after we came around the moon to come back to Earth. Now, do the math here. If life is time plus chance plus random, how in the world is everything so harmonic, so predictable, and the universe running in such a way that we, with mathematical formulas, can predict what's going to happen and why? In fact, Hank Hanegraaff, in his book On Evolution, says Da Vinci, by many viewed as the founder of modern science, was a committed creationist. It was that belief that led him to, if that's true, then. Robert Boyle was the former modern father of chemistry and the greatest physical scientist of a generation ago, was a great apologist for the Genesis account. Isaac Newton, a prodigious intellect who developed calculus and discovered the laws of gravity and designed the very first reflecting telescope, not only refuted atheism, but strongly defended the biblical account of creation. Louis Pasteur, well known for the process of pasteurization and for utterly demolishing the concept of spontaneous generation, was a devoutly religious man strongly opposed to Darwin. And you go through the list of great scientists, Francis Bacon, Pascal the mathematician, Mendel, Faraday, Einstein. One of the greatest intellects of modern time came to the conclusion that God did not create by chance, but rather he worked according to planned, mathematical, teleonomic, and therefore to him, rational guidelines. You see, when you start looking at where science came from people who believed there was a God who made life in order. When you look at the law of cause and effect, how is it that in everything we see, in all of life, the law of cause and effect, we say, this is true. I mean, if you come into your desk at home at night and there is milk spilled all over your table and all the papers are wet and there are fingerprints and there are crumbs of brownies and your house is dark and your three children are in bed, what do you surmise? Obviously, nothing happened. What do you know? If there's that cause, there's an effect. One of your kids was in your study. And yet that is so basic, we think of it in every area of life, both physical and relational. And yet, evolution says without any cause, we have an effect. There was no designer. There was no God. In fact, where did the chemical soup come from? Where did these basic elements come from where the cell came into life? You can go on in science, the laws of thermodynamics. First law is the conservation of energy. Matter cannot be created or destroyed. Now, there's a lot of really interesting thinking about how that was all suspended for periods of time, and the atmosphere might have been different, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Tell you what you know, is that matter can't be created or destroyed. It's one of the most timeless laws that you ever see in all of science. The idea of creation happening gradually, you have energy being created. It violates the first law of thermodynamics. And the second is the bullet in the head. It's the law of entropy. Entropy basically says that for you and for me and for most people, if you don't ever cut your lawn, if you never put fertilizer on it, and if you never water it, it doesn't get better and better and better and greener and greener and greener and trimmed and trimmed and trimmed. In other words, entropy says the universe started out and is moving from a position of order to chaos. It is winding down. And that's true in relationships. It's true of the Earth. Now think of that. All the things we can observe. You know, when we see a star far away, we evaluate and say, this happened, that happened, and it must be so old because of the changing. Because we assume it went from brighter to less. And yet the whole presupposition of Darwinism and evolution is, it went from what? Chaos to order. Why is it that we take our brains and throw them in the trash can and violate the most basic premises of science because we want to hold on to Darwinism? I'll tell you why. It's not a science, it's a religion. And what Darwin did is Darwin got rid of God. And the fact of the matter is, in your heart and my heart, we all wanted rid of God. From the time of the fall, we've been running and hiding from God. But with Darwin, we could be smart, intellectual, shrewd, rational, sophisticated sinners. And I was one and am, and so are you. I don't have time to develop the last one, so I put some notes, but let me just say what it is and let me wrap this up, because the last point in my mind is the most important. Which theory or claim has best archaeological evidence or track record? And I don't know about you, but when I was in science class, ninth grade biology, and then later in college, I had the pictures. Remember this? Java Man, Piltdown Man, Nebraska Man, and then it was Peking Man, Neanderthal Man, Ramapithecus Man, Australopithecus. I would encourage you to take some time and read through those very, very carefully and find out what is in your textbooks, what you were told was gospel truth, that one by one by one, you find out that Java Man was built with a bone from here, a jaw from there, and a tooth from over there. You find that Piltdown Man was actually a hoax, that they treated the bones and did some filing on the teeth. You find Nebraska Man that is still in textbooks today was a tooth of an extinct pig. You find that Peking Man just amazingly came to being when a grant was running out. And all the bones were lost. You find that Neanderthal Man actually was a guy who had arthritis or rheumatoid problem, and he bent over when he walked, and he was as human as you or me, but it still goes in the textbooks. And you do the research. At the very end, even Richard Leakey, I mean, you know, Mr. Archaeologist, anthropologist himself, with Lucy, says, there's no evidence here. Who knows? And yet, there is not a single archaeological discovery that has said that the historical data, the people, the names, the times, and the places in the Bible are wrong. Sir William Ramsay in the last century, and then multitudes of others, have spent their life. He was an unbeliever, by the way. Went to Israel to prove the Bible was wrong. And after a couple decades there, he said, this is the most reliable book archaeologically that I've ever been exposed to. Well, let's kind of lean back now, okay? I don't know about you, my head hurts. Real carefully, will you really look at the next few questions with an open heart and an open mind? Question number one, is evolution really the airtight scientific fact that we were all led to believe it was and were taught in school? Let me ask you that with an open mind, regardless, especially those with science backgrounds. When you look at the data, is it? Second question, should the current crises among top non-Christian scientists cause you to re-examine your view of evolution's validity? More importantly, your worldview. You can't grasp, and I can't fathom, how much of Darwinian thinking and evolution, natural selection, survival of the fittest, is built into multiple other disciplines that we buy, and it's our worldview. You need to do some hard work in your thinking, and so do I. Third question to ponder. Since science overwhelmingly argues for creation as impossible without intelligent design, what are the implications for knowing or believing in a designer? Think that one through. Final question. Could evolution be a mask we have collectively hid behind in order to avoid the accountability and the implications of answering to our Creator? Final question is, what do you believe concerning the origin of life? And why? Not what someone else believes, not what you were taught. What do you believe? And let me ask you something. Are you willing to do the research or get a couple good non-Christian books? Get Behe's book. Here's what's happened. We are so existential, you won't take the time to think about the most important matters in the world. And instead, we become materialist, which is evolutionist, a material universe, and it's get, find, find, feel, existentialism, thank you, Paul Sartre, and all the jazz. And now, be fulfilled, be a consumer, and don't take the time to think clearly. Why are you here? Could there be a God? And you will answer to him, and so will I. That's heavy stuff. You know what I liked about that little girl? She was not only bright and honest, she was a hard worker. Every book I gave her, she read. The hard part was I gave her a book 1 week, it was done the next week. Gave her a book, she read it, and she was open. I said, you come here 6 weeks and find out. First, intellectually ask the issues. You come here for 6 weeks, and I said, you know what, I'm putting our church on call because there's a lot of fallen people who struggle just like me. But I said, you come for 6 weeks, and don't just come to the worship services. She was college age. I said, go to the college group. Go to Graceland. Get in a small group for 6 weeks and find out whether this is true for yourself. Experiment. Use the scientific method. Evaluate. After 4 weeks, she came to Christ. 6 months later, she decided that she wanted to use her brain and study theology. She went to Seattle Pacific. In typical form, she graduated in a year and a half. You know where she's at right now as we speak? She's in Costa Rica. She decided she's going to figure out how to help the poor people of the world and people who haven't heard the gospel with the kind of brain. I think she's 20 now. How about you? You willing to really be honest with God? Not just seekers. You know what? There's a lot of people, a lot of us Christians, we just use different camouflage to hide behind the Creator's call. If you believe He's good, step out in faith and start living according to His word and take some risk and start loving some people and stop being worldviewed into Darwin's origin. Get. Material. Break out of those lies and live a radical, Christ-like, winsome, go-for-broke faith. And you know what that does? As one church person who ran from God, you live that way, agnostics like me will be attracted to the person of Christ and the gospel, and many people will come to Christ and meet their Creator.
Thanks, Chip. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram, and Chip's talk today, Why I Believe in Creation, is from his very popular series, Why I Believe. Why I Believe will help you answer the most pivotal claims of the Christian faith and give you solid answers to tough questions about the Christian faith. You'll learn about the historical evidence supporting the resurrection of Christ, the reliability of the Bible, and the afterlife. In the process, you'll discover that you don't have to throw your brains in the trash can to become a Christian. The series is called Why I Believe, and it's available now for a special on-air discount price. To order, please call toll-free at 1-888-333-6003. This six-part CD series is perfect for personal study or as a small group curriculum for you or your church. Again, the CD series, Why I Believe, is available for a limited time at a special on-air discount price. Now call today, 1-888-333-6003. 1-888-333-6003. Well, we've been talking for the last couple of weeks about a special resource offer from Living on the Edge. And Chip, how can Living on the Edge just give away this valuable resource?
Well, Dave, we've made a faith decision as a ministry. And what we find is issues like
creation, evolution, homosexuality, abortion? Is truth relative or is it absolute? What we found is these are make or break issues in people's lives. And we're living in a world of kind of VH1, MTV, reality shows where we have a whole generation of people that have never heard the basics. And rather than sort of the give-to-get mentality, you know, we'll give you this booklet if you give us money, we are really stepping out in faith and saying, God, we want to put these kind of resources in the hands of people who want to follow you with all their heart. And in the hands of people that are saying, you know, I don't get it. I mean, everything I hear is different what the Bible says. So is there logical, reasonable, well-founded answers to some of these deep questions? And we don't want money to be an issue. But it does demand that those people that are kind of on the Living on the Edge team who say, this is ministering to me, that they really stand with us. That, you know, they go to that phone or they go to the website and say, hey, I want to give financially. Because to be very honest, with about a million listeners, we have about 1 or 2% of all the people who listen who actually support financially. And can you imagine if it just got up to 3 or 4%? We want to get these tools in the hands of people so God can open their hearts and minds and change lives.
Thanks, Chip. Now, if Living on the Edge is ministering to you, would you prayerfully consider giving a gift to help underwrite the costs of providing life-changing resources like the booklets Chip just mentioned to those seeking to know the truth? You can donate online at lote.org. And if you haven't signed up for the Living on the Edge online community yet, why not take a couple of extra minutes and do that today? It's free, and every month we offer a wide range of helpful resources and tools to help you grow in your walk with Christ. Again, our web address is lote.org. That's lote.org. Well, now with some final thoughts from today's message, here once again is Chip.
It has been a delight to go through this material together. And I want you to know, shortly after I taught this material on the life of our church, I had an opportunity to go on a live talk show. And a fellow from our church who came out from nowhere, really, joined me. He went to MIT. He has a PhD in artificial intelligence. And he and I together got to defend what the Bible would say versus what evolutionists are saying. You know what I want you to know? It was amazing, armed with scientific fact and what God has said in the Bible, how we could intellectually hold our head up high and in a winsome, loving way, help good-thinking people to rethink their presuppositions. I have two things I'd like to address. One, skeptics, are you willing to be intellectually honest? Are you willing to examine the material and the facts and follow them wherever they lead? Are you willing to be unbiased? Are you ready for this? Are you willing to be not anti-intellectual, but open to all truth, even if it violates some of your presuppositions? Please pray, search, maybe even order this material and listen to it, examine it. And for believers, the day is upon us to be armed. You need to be able to articulate your faith. You need to be able to instruct your children. We've put these materials together to provide a resource and a tool to help you intellectually think through these issues of your faith. The Bible commands us to be ready to give a defense for the hope that's in us. We'll give you some information on how you can get this, but I'm excited about how God can use this in your home, in Christian schools, and in your church. God created the world way before Darwin ever came along. We need to know it, and we need to share it.
Well, thanks, Chip. Say, would you like the convenience of listening to Living on the Edge on your own schedule? Well, you can. Welcome to the Living on the Edge podcast. Now, the Living on the Edge podcast is delivered directly to your computer each day, so you can listen there at your computer or download it to your iPod or MP3 player. To sign up, go to lote.org and click on the Listen Online button there on the homepage. Then just follow the directions to sign up for the podcast. It takes just a few minutes, and best of all, it's free. That's lote.org. Well, join us again on Monday as Chip continues our current series, Why I Believe. For Chip Ingram and the entire staff at Living on the Edge, this is Dave Drewy saying thank you for listening to this edition of Living on the Edge.